They plagued Lyssa in a way she hadn't thought possible. What really bothered her the most wasn't the thought that if she'd come with me, she could have kept me out of trouble. No, her biggest issue was that she hadn't thought of coming with me in the first place. I was her best friend. As far as she was concerned, that should have been her immediate reaction to my departure. It hadn't been, and now Lyssa was racked with even more guilt than usual. The guilt was all-consuming, and she would occasionally transform it to anger to ease the pain. It didn't help much. Her mood didn't improve as the evening progressed, either. Not long after the group's arrival, the queen hosted a small reception for the most elite of all visitors who had come to the court. Lyssa was quickly discovering that the queen always seemed to be hosting some party or another. At one point in her life, Lyssa would have considered that fun. She no longer did, at least not when it came to these kinds of parties. But keeping her dark feelings locked up, Lyssa stayed good at playing the role of nice royal girl. The queen seemed happy that Lyssa had a suitable royal friend and was equally pleased when Lyssa impressed other royals and dignitaries she was introduced to. At one point, though, Lyssa's resolve nearly faltered.
"Before you leave," said Tatiana, "we should see about your guardians."
She and Lyssa stood together with a group of admirers and hangers-on who were keeping respectful distances. Lyssa had been staring vacantly at the bubbles in her untouched champagne and looked up with a start.
"Guardians, Your Majesty?"
"Well, there's no delicate way to put this, but now, for better or for worse, you're without any protection."
The queen paused respectfully.
"Belikov was a good man."
My name naturally didn't come to her lips. I might as well have never existed. She'd never liked me, particularly since she thought I was going to run off with Adrian. As it was, Lyssa had noticed Tatiana watching with some consideration while Avery and Adrian flirted. It was hard to say if the queen disapproved. Her partying aside, Avery seemed a model girl. Save that Tatiana had wanted Lyssa and Adrian to eventually get together.
"I don't need any protection right now," said Lyssa politely, her heart clenching.
"No, but you'll be out of school soon enough. We think we've found some excellent candidates for you. One of them's a woman. A lucky find."
"Janine Hathaway offered to be my guardian," said Lyssa suddenly.
I hadn't known that, but as she spoke, I read the story in her mind.
My mom had approached her not long after I left. I was a little shocked. My mom was very loyal to her current assignment. This would have been a big move for her.
"Janine Hathaway?"
Tatiana's eyebrows rose nearly to her hairline.
"I'm sure she has other commitments. No, we've got much better choices. This young lady's only a few years older than you."
A better choice than Janine Hathaway? Not likely. Before Dimitri, my mother had been the gold standard by which I measured all badassness. Tatiana's young lady was undoubtedly someone under the queen's control, and more importantly, not a Hathaway. The queen didn't like my mom any more than she liked me. Once, when Tatiana had been bitching me out for something, she'd made a reference to a man my mother had been involved with, someone whom I suspected might be my father, a guy named Ibrahim. The funny thing was, the queen had almost sounded like she had once had an interest in the guy too, and I had to wonder if that was a part of her dislike for my family. Lyssa put on a tight, polite smile for the queen and thanked her for the consideration. Lyssa and I both understood what was going on. This was Tatiana's game. Everyone was a part of her plan, and there was no way to go against her. For a brief moment, Lyssa had that strange thought again of something Viktor Dashkov had once said to her. Aside from his crazy killing and kidnapping schemes, Viktor had also wanted to start a revolution among the Moroi. He thought the power distribution was off, something Lyssa occasionally believed too, and that it was wielded unfairly by those with too much control. The moment was gone almost as soon as it came. Viktor Dashkov was a crazy villain whose ideas deserved no acknowledgement. Then, as soon as courtesy allowed, Lyssa excused herself from the queen and headed across the room, feeling like she was going to explode with grief and anger. She nearly ran into Avery as she did.
"God," said Avery, "do you think Reed could embarrass me any more? Two people have tried to make conversation with him, and he keeps scaring them off. He actually just told Robin Baddeka to shut up. I mean, yeah, she was going on, but still, that is not cool. Avery's dramatic look of exasperation faded as she took in Lissa's face. Hey, what's wrong? Lissa glanced at Tatiana and then turned back to Avery, taking comfort in her friend's blue-gray eyes. I need to get out of here. Lissa took a deep, calming breath. Remember all that good stuff you said you knew about? When is that going to happen? Avery smiled. As soon as you want. I returned to myself, sitting there on the curb. My emotions were still going crazy, and my eyes were fighting off tears. My earlier doubts were confirmed. Lissa didn't need me anymore. And yet, I still had that feeling that there was something odd going on that I couldn't quite put a finger on. I supposed her guilt over Mia's comment or spirit side effects could be affecting her, but still, she wasn't the same Lissa. Footsteps on the pavement made me look up. Of all the people who might have found me, I would have expected Abe or maybe Victoria, but it wasn't. It was Yeva. The old woman stood there, a shawl draped over her narrow shoulders, and her sharp, cunning eyes looking down at me disapprovingly. I sighed. What happened? Did a house fall on your sister? I asked. Maybe there was a benefit to our language barrier. She pursed her lips.
You can't stay here any longer, she said.
My mouth dropped open.
You speak English?
She snorted.
Of course.
I shot up. All this time you've been pretending not to? You've been making Paul play translator?
It's easier,
she said simply.
You avoid a lot of annoying conversation when you don't speak the language. And I've found that Americans make the most annoying conversation of all.
I was still aghast. You don't even know me. But from the first day, you've been giving me hell. Why? Why do you hate me?
I don't hate you, but I am disappointed.
Disappointed? How?
I dreamed you would come.
I heard that. You dream a lot?
Sometimes, she said.
The moonlight glinted in her eyes, enhancing her otherworldly appearance. A chill ran down my spine.
Sometimes my dreams are true. Sometimes not. I dreamed Dinka was dead, but I didn't want to believe it. Not until I had proof. You were my proof.
And that's why you were disappointed? Yeva drew the shawl more tightly around her.
No. In my dreams you shone. You burned like a star, and I saw you as a warrior. Someone who could do great deeds. Instead, you've sat around and moped. You've done nothing. You haven't done what you came to do.
I studied her, wondering if she really knew what she was talking about. And what is that exactly?
You know what it is. I dreamed that too.
I waited for more. When it didn't come, I laughed. A nice vague answer. You're as bad as any scam fortune teller. Even in the darkness, I could see the anger kindle in her eyes.
You've come to search for Dimka, to try to kill him. You must find him.
What do you mean, try? I didn't want to believe her. Didn't want to believe she might actually know my future. Nonetheless, I found myself getting hooked in. Have you seen what happens? Do I kill him?
I can't see everything.
Oh, fantastic.
I only saw that you must find him.
But that's all you've got? I already knew that.
It's what I saw.
I groaned. Damn it! I don't have time for these cryptic clues. If you can't help me, then don't say anything. She stayed quiet. I slung my bag over my shoulder. Fine, I'm leaving then. And like that, I knew where I would go. Tell the others. Well, tell them thank you for everything. And then I'm sorry.
You're doing the right thing, she said. This isn't where you should be.
So I've heard, I muttered, walking away. I wondered if she'd say anything else, chastise me, curse me, give me more mysterious words of a wisdom. But she stayed silent, and I didn't look back. I had no home, not here and not in America. The only thing left for me was to do what I'd come to do. I had told Abe I kept my promises. I would. I'd leave Baia like I told him. And I'd kill Dimitri as I'd promised myself I would. I knew where to go now. The address had never left my mind. 83 Kasakova. I didn't know where it was, but once I reached the town center, I found a guy walking down the street who gave me directions. The address was close by, only about a mile, and I headed out at a brisk pace. When I reached the house, I was glad to see that the lights were still on. Even as pissed off and raging as I was, I didn't want to wake anyone up. I also didn't want to speak to Nikolai and was relieved when Dennis opened the door. His expression was all astonishment when he saw me. Despite his bold words back at the church earlier, I don't think he'd really believed I'd join him and the other unpromised ones. He was speechless, so I did the talking. I changed my mind. I'm coming with you. I took a deep breath, bracing myself for what came next. I'd promised Abe I'd leave Baia, but I hadn't promised to return to the U.S. Take me to Novosibirsk. Chapter 16. Dennis and his two unpromised friends, Arthur and Lev, were ecstatic that I was going to be part of their posse. But if they expected me to share their crazy enthusiasm for reckless Strigoi hunting, they were about to be sorely disappointed. In fact, it didn't take long after I joined them before they realized that I was approaching the hunt very differently than they were. Dennis's friend Lev had a car, and we took turns driving to Novosibirsk. The drive was about 15 hours, and even though we stopped at a hotel for the night, it was still a lot of continuous time to be cooped up in a small space with three guys who couldn't stop talking about all the Strigoi they were going to kill. In particular, they kept trying to draw me out. They wanted to know about how many Strigoi I'd slain. They wanted to know what the battle at the academy had been like. They wanted to know my methods. Anytime my mind turned to those topics, though, all I could think of was blood and grief. It was nothing I wanted to brag about, and it took about 6 hours on the road for them to finally figure out that they weren't going to get much information from me. Instead, they regaled me with tales of their own adventures. To be fair, they'd slain several Strigoi, but they'd lost a number of their friends, all of whom had been in their teens, like these guys. My experiences weren't that dissimilar. I'd lost friends, too. My losses had been a result of being outnumbered, though. Dennis's group's casualties seemed to have been more due to rushing in without thinking. Indeed, their plan once we got to Novosibirsk wasn't really that solid. They reiterated that Strigoi liked to hunt at places that were crowded at night, like dance clubs, or in remote places like alleys that made for easy pickings. No one noticed as much when people disappeared from those kinds of places. So Dennis's plans mostly involved trolling those hot spots in the hopes that we'd run into Strigoi. My initial thought was to immediately ditch this group and strike out on my own. After all, my main goal had been to simply get to Novosibirsk. With everything I'd learned now, it seemed logical that Siberia's largest city would be the next best place to look. Then, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that jumping into the Strigoi scene alone would be as stupid as one of the unpromised gang's plans. I could use their backup. Plus, since I didn't actually know where Dimitri was yet, I had to come up with a method of getting some information. I'd need help for that. We made it to Novosibirsk at the end of the second day of driving. Despite hearing about its size, I hadn't imagined it would be anything like Moscow or St. Petersburg. And true, it turned out to be not quite as large as they were, but it was still just as much a city complete with skyscrapers, theaters, commuters, and the same beautiful architecture. We crashed with a friend of theirs who had an apartment downtown, a dampier named Tamara. Her English wasn't very good, but from the sounds of it, she was another unpromised one and just as excited as everyone else to rid the world of Strigoi. She was a little older than the rest of us, which is why she had her own place, and was a cute brunette with freckles. It sounded as though she waited until whenever the guys came to town to hunt, which I took as a small blessing. At least she didn't go out alone. She seemed particularly excited to have another girl around. But like the others, she quickly picked up that I didn't share their enthusiasm. When our first night of Strigoi hunting came around, I finally stepped up into a leadership position. The sudden change in behavior startled them at first, but they soon listened with rapt attention, still caught up in my superstar reputation. "Okay," I said, looking from face to face. We were in Tamara's tiny living room, sitting in a circle. "Here's how it's going to work. We're going to hit the nightclub scene as a group, patrolling it and the alleys behind it for..."
"Wait," interrupted Dennis. "We usually split up."
"Which is why you get killed," I snapped. "We're going as a group."
"Haven't you killed Strigoi by yourself, though?"
asked Clev. He was the tallest of the group, with a long and lanky figure that was almost Maroi-like. "Yes, but I got lucky. That, and I also just thought I was a better fighter than any of them. Call me arrogant, but I was a damn good guardian. Or near guardian. We'll do better with all five of us. When we find Strigoi, we've got to make sure we take care of them in an isolated place." I hadn't forgotten Sydney's warnings. "But before we kill them, I need to talk to them. It'll be your job to restrain them."
"Why?" asked Dennis. "What do you have to say to them?"
"Actually, it's what they have to say to me. Look, it won't take long, and you'll get to make your kill in the end, so don't worry about it, but..." This next part went against my grand plans, but I knew I had to say it. I wouldn't get them killed for the sake of my own quest. "If we get ourselves in a situation where you're trapped or in immediate danger, forget the talking and restraining. Kill. Save yourself." Apparently, I seemed confident and badass enough that they decided to go along with whatever I said. Part of our plan involved going undercover, so to speak. Any Strigoi who was close or got a good enough look would immediately recognize us as Dompierres. It was important that we not attract any attention. We needed a Strigoi scanning for victims to pass right over us. We needed to look like other human clubgoers. So we dressed the part, and I was a bit astonished at how well the guys cleaned up. Dennis, crazy or not, was particularly good-looking, sharing the same dark gold hair and brown eyes that his brother Nikolai had. My few changes of clothes weren't quite up to partying standards, so Tamara delved into her wardrobe for me. She seemed to take a lot of delight in finding things for me to wear. We were actually similar in size, which was kind of amazing. With her tall, super slim build, Lissa and I had never been able to share clothes. Tamara was my height and had a similar body type. She first offered me a short, tight dress that was so similar to the one Victoria had worn that I just shook my head and handed it back. The memories of our argument still hurt, and I wasn't going to relive that night or in any way play blood whore dress up. Instead, Tamara settled for dressing me in black jeans and a black tank top. I consented to hair and makeup, too, and studying myself in the mirror, I had to admit, she did a good job. As vain as it was, I liked looking good. I especially liked that the guys looked at me in a way that was admiring and respectful, but not like I was some piece of meat. Tamara offered me jewelry, too, but the only thing I'd wear was the Nazar around my neck. My stake required a jacket, but she found a sexy leather one that didn't take away from the rest of the outfit's appeal. Setting out around midnight, I couldn't help shaking my head. "We're the goddamn hottest vampire hunters ever," I muttered. Dennis led us to a club where they'd found Strigoi before. It was also apparently where one of their unpromised friends had been killed. It was in a seedy part of town, which I guess added to its appeal for Strigoi. A lot of the people there were middle and upper-class young people, apparently drawn in by the dangerous aspect. If only they'd known just how dangerous it was. I'd made a lot of jokes to Dmitri about Russia and Eastern Europe being 10 years behind in music, but when we entered, I discovered the ground-thumping techno song playing was something I'd heard in the U.S. just before leaving. The place was crowded and dark, with flashing lights that were actually a little annoying to Dompierre eyes. Our night vision would adapt to the darkness and then be blasted when a strobe light kicked on. In this case, I didn't need my sight. My shadow-kissed senses didn't feel any Strigoi in the area. "Come on," I said to the others. "Let's dance for a while and wait. There are no Strigoi nearby."
"How do you know?"
asked Dennis, staring at me in wonder.
"I just do. Stay together."
Our little circle moved to the dance floor, It had been so long since I'd danced, and I was a bit surprised at how quickly I found myself getting into the rhythm. Part of me said I should have stayed ever vigilant, but my Strigoi alarm system would immediately snap me awake if any danger came. That nausea was kind of hard to ignore. But after an hour of dancing, no Strigoi had appeared. We left the dance floor and started circling the club's edges, then moved outside to sweep that area too. Nothing. "Is there another club nearby?" I asked.
"Sure," said Arthur.
He was stocky with close-shaved hair and a ready smile.
"A couple blocks over."
We followed him and found a similar scene. Another secret club hidden in a run-down building. More flashing lights, more crowds, more pounding music. Disturbingly, what started to bother me first was the smell. That many people generated a lot of sweat. I had no doubt even the humans could smell it. To us, it was cloying. Tamara and I exchanged looks and wrinkled our noses, needing no words to convey our disgust. We moved to the dance floor again, and Lev started to leave to get a drink. I punched him in the arm. He exclaimed something in Russian that I recognized as a swear word.
"What was that for?"
he asked. "For being stupid. How do you expect to kill something that's twice as fast as you while drunk?" He shrugged, unconcerned, and I resisted the urge to hit him in the face this time.
"One won't hurt. Besides, there aren't even any..."
"Be quiet!" It was creeping over me, that weird stirring in my stomach. Forgetting my cover, I stopped dancing, scanning the crowd for the source. While I was relying on my senses to feel Strigoi, spotting them in the crowd was a bit harder. I took a few steps toward the entrance, and my nausea lessened. I moved toward the bar, and the feeling increased. "This way," I told them. "Act like you're still into the music." My tension was contagious, and I saw the anticipation sweep them, as well as a little fear. Good. Maybe they take this seriously. As we headed in the bar's direction, I tried to keep my body language oriented toward it, like I was seeking a drink. All the while, my eyes swept the crowd's periphery. There, I had him. A male Strigoi was standing off in a corner, his arm around a girl close to my age. In the dim lighting, he almost seemed attractive. I knew closer examination would reveal the deathly pale skin and red eyes that all Strigoi had. The girl might not have been able to see them in the darkened club, or the Strigoi might have been using compulsion on her. Probably both, judging from the smile on her face. Strigoi were able to compel others just as well as a spirit user like Lyssa could. Better, even. Before our eyes, I saw the Strigoi lead the girl down a small, unnoticed hallway. At the end, I could just make out a glowing exit sign. At least I presumed it was an exit sign. The letters were Cyrillic. "Any idea where that door goes?" I asked the others. The guy shrugged and Dennis repeated my question to Tamara. She answered back and he translated.
"There's a small alley out back where they keep trash. It's between this building and a factory. No one's usually there."
"Can we get to it by going around the club?" Dennis waited for Tamara's response.
"Yes, it's open on both sides."
"Perfect." We hurried out of the club by the front door, and I divided our group into two. The plan was to come at the Strigoi from both sides and trap him in the middle, provided he and his victim were still out back. It was possible he could have led her elsewhere, but I thought it more likely he'd want to subdue her and get his blood right there, particularly if it was as deserted as Tamara said it usually was. I was right. Once my group had split off and peered around behind the club, I saw the Strigoi and the girl lurking in the shadow of a trash can. He was leaning over her, mouth near her neck, and I silently swore. They didn't waste any time. Hoping she was still alive, I came charging down the alley, the others on my heels. From the alley's other side, Dennis and Lev also came running. As soon as he heard the first footfall, the Strigoi reacted instantly, his staggeringly fast reflexes kicking in. He immediately dropped the girl, and in the space of a heartbeat, he chose Dennis and Lev over Arthur, Tamara, and me. Not a bad strategy, really. There were only two of them. Because he was so fast, he probably hoped to incapacitate them quickly and then turn on us before we could flank him. And it almost worked. A powerful hit sent Lev flying. To my relief, A couple of trash cans blocked him from the building's wall. Hitting them wouldn't feel good, but if I had a choice, I'd rather hit metal cans than solid bricks. The Strigoi pounced on Dennis next, but Dennis proved remarkably fast. Unfairly, I'd assumed none of these unpromised had any real fighting skills. I should have known better. They'd had the same training as me, they just lacked discipline. Dennis dodged the blow and struck out low, aiming for the Strigoi's legs. The hit landed, though it wasn't strong enough to knock him over. A flash of silver showed in Dennis's hands, and he managed to partially swipe the Strigoi's cheek just before a backhanded slap knocked the Dampier into me. A cut like that wouldn't be lethal to the Strigoi, but the silver would hurt, and I heard him snarl. His fangs gleamed with saliva. I sidestepped Dennis quickly enough that he didn't knock me over. Tamara grabbed his arm, holding him so that he wouldn't fall either. She was fast, too, and had barely steadied him before leaping up at the Strigoi. He swatted her away, but didn't manage to hit her hard enough to push her far. Arthur and I were on him by that point, our combined force knocking him against the wall. Still, he was stronger, and the pinning was brief before he broke free. A responsible voice in my head, that sounded suspiciously like Dimitri's, warned me that that had been my window to kill him. It would have been the smart and safe thing to do. I'd had the opening, and my stake was in my hand. If my crazy interrogation plan failed, the others' deaths would be on my head. As one, Arthur and I leapt out again. "Help us!" I yelled. Tamara threw herself against the Strigoi, landing a swift kick to the stomach as well. I could feel him starting to shake us off, but then Dennis joined in too. Between the four of us, we wrestled the Strigoi down so that he lay back first on the pavement. But the worst wasn't over. Keeping him down wasn't easy. He thrashed around with incredible strength, limbs twisting everywhere. I heaved myself up, trying to throw my body's weight across his torso while the others restrained his legs. Another set of hands joined us, and I looked up to see Lev lending his strength too. His lip was bleeding, but his face was determined. The Strigoi hadn't stopped moving, but I felt satisfied he wouldn't break away anytime soon, not with all five of us holding him. Shifting forward, I placed the point of my stake at his neck. It gave him pause, but he soon resumed his struggle. I leaned over his face. "Do you know Dmitri Belikov?" I demanded. He shouted something incomprehensible at me that didn't sound very friendly. I pressed the stake in harder and drew a long gash against his throat. He screamed in pain, pure evil and malice shining out from his eyes as he continued swearing in Russian. "Translate!" I demanded, not caring who did it. "What I said!" A moment later, Dennis said something in Russian, presumably my question since I heard Dimitri's name in there. The Strigoi growled back a response and Dennis shook his head. "He says he isn't going to play games with us." I took the stake and slashed at the Strigoi's face, widening the gash Dennis had made earlier. Again, the Strigoi cried out, and I prayed club security wouldn't hear any of this. I gave him a smile filled with enough malice to match his own. "Tell him we're going to keep playing games with him until he talks. One way or another, he dies tonight. It's up to him whether it happens slowly or quickly." I honestly couldn't believe those words had come out of my mouth. They were so harsh, so, well, cruel. I'd never in my entire life expected to be torturing anyone, even a Strigoi. The Strigoi gave Dennis's translation another defiant response, and so I kept on with the stake, making gashes and cuts that would have killed any human Maroi or Dampier. Finally, he shot off a string of words that didn't sound like his usual insults. Dennis immediately translated.
"He said he's never heard of anyone named that, and that if Dimitri's a friend of yours, he'll be sure to kill him slowly and painfully."
I almost smiled at the Strigoi's last effort at defiance. The problem with my strategy here was that the Strigoi could be lying. I'd have no way of knowing. Something in his response made me think he wasn't. He sounded like he thought I was referring to a human or a Dampier, not a Strigoi. "He's useless then," I said. I leaned back and glanced at Dennis. "Go ahead and kill him." It was what Dennis had been dying to do. He didn't hesitate, his stake striking hard and swift through the Strigoi's heart. The frantic struggling stilled a moment later. The evil light faded from the red eyes. We stood up, and I saw my companions' faces watching me with apprehension and fear.
Rose?
Asked Dennis at last.
What are you hoping to...
Never mind that, I interrupted, moving over to the unconscious human girl's side. Kneeling down, I examined her neck. He'd bitten her, but not much blood had been taken. The wound was relatively small and bled only a little. She stirred slightly and moaned when I touched her, which I took as a good sign. Carefully, I dragged her away from the trash can and out into the light where she'd be most noticeable. The Strigoi, however, I dragged into as dark a place as I could, almost completely obscuring him. After that, I asked to borrow Dennis's cell phone and dialed the number I'd kept crumpled in my pocket for the last week. After a couple of rings, Sydney answered in Russian. She sounded sleepy. Sydney, this is Rose. There was a slight pause.
Rose, what's going on?
Are you back in St. Petersburg?
Yes. Where are you?
Novosibirsk. Do you guys have agents here?
Of course, she said warily.
Why? I've got something for you to clean up.
Oh, dear.
Hey, at least I'm calling. And it's not like me ridding the world of another Strigoi is a bad thing. Besides, didn't you want me to let you know?
Yes. Where are you?
I put Dennis on the phone briefly so that he could explain our specific location. He handed the phone back to me when he finished, and I told Sydney about the girl.
Is she seriously injured?
Doesn't look like it, I said. What should we do?
Leave her. The guy who's coming will make sure she's okay and doesn't go telling stories. He'll explain it when he gets there.
Whoa. Hey, I'm not going to be here when he arrives.
Rose, I'm out of here, I told her, and I'd really appreciate it if you didn't tell anyone else that I called. Say, like, Abe.
Rose, please, Sydney, just don't tell or else. I hesitated. If you do, I'll stop calling when this happens. We're going to be taking down a few more. God, what's next? First torture, now threats. Worse, I was threatening someone I liked. Of course I was lying. I understood why Sydney's group did what they did, and I wouldn't risk the exposure. She didn't know that, though, and I prayed she'd think I was just unstable enough to risk revealing us to the world.
Rose?
She tried yet again. I didn't give her the chance. Thanks, Sydney. We'll be in touch. I disconnected and handed Dennis the phone. Come on, guys. We're not done tonight. It was clear they thought I was crazy to be interrogating Strigoi, but considering how reckless they were sometimes, my behavior wasn't quite weird enough for them to lose their faith in me. Soon they grew enthusiastic again, high on the idea of our first kill on this trip. My uncanny ability to sense Strigoi made me even cooler in their eyes, and I grew confident they'd pretty much follow me anywhere. We caught two more Strigoi that night and managed to repeat the procedure. The results were the same. Lots of insults in Russian, no new information. Once I was convinced a Strigoi had nothing to offer us, I'd let the unpromised go in for the kill. They loved it, but after that third one, I found myself growing weary both mentally and physically. I told the group we were going to go home. And then, while cutting around the back of a factory, I sensed a fourth Strigoi. We jumped him. Another scuffle occurred, but we eventually managed to pin him as we had the others. Go ahead, I told Dennis. You know what to...
I'm going to rip your throat out,
the Strigoi snarled. Whoa, this one spoke English. Dennis opened his mouth to begin the interrogation, but I shook my head. I'll take over. Like the other Strigoi, he swore and struggled, even with the stake against his neck, making it hard for me to talk. Look, I said, growing impatient and tired. Just tell us what we need to know. We're looking for a dompier named Dmitri Belikov.
I know him. The Strigoi's voice was smug. And he's no dompier.
Without realizing it, I'd called Dmitri a dompier. I was tired and had slipped up. No wonder this Strigoi was so pleased to talk. He assumed we didn't know about Dmitri turning. And like any arrogant Strigoi, he was happy to tell us more, clearly in the hopes of causing us pain.
Your friend has been awakened. He stalks the night with us now, drinking the blood of foolish girls like you.
In a split second, 1,000 thoughts raced through my head. Holy crap! I'd come to Russia thinking it would be easy to find Dmitri. I'd had those hopes dashed in his hometown, nearly causing me to give up, and I'd swung the other way, resigning myself to the near impossibility of my task. The thought that I might be close to something here was staggering.
You're lying, I said. You've never seen him.
I see him all the time. I've killed with him.
My stomach twisted, and it had nothing to do with the Strugoi's proximity. Don't think about Dmitri killing people. Don't think about Dmitri killing people. I said the words over and over in my head, forcing myself to stay calm.
If that's true, I hissed back, then I've got a message for you to deliver to him. Tell him Rose Hathaway is looking for him.
I'm not your errand boy, he said, glowering.
My stakes lashed out, drawing blood, and he grimaced in pain. You're anything I want you to be. Now go tell Dmitri what I told you. Rose Hathaway. Rose Hathaway is looking for him. Say it.
I pressed the point to his neck.
Say my name so I know you'll remember.
I'll remember it so I can kill you.
The stake pressed harder, spilling blood.
Rose Hathaway, he said.
He spit at me, but missed. Satisfied, I leaned back. Dennis watched me, expectantly, stake poised and ready.
Now we kill him?
I shook my head. Now we let him go. Chapter 17. Convincing them to release a Strugoi, particularly when we had him trapped, wasn't easy. My questioning hadn't made sense to them either, but they'd gone along with it. Letting a Strugoi go? That was really crazy, even for the unpromised. They exchanged uneasy glances with one another, and I wondered if they'd disobey. In the end, my harshness and authority won out. They wanted me as their leader and put their faith in my actions, no matter how insane they seemed. Of course, once we did let the Strugoi go, we had the new problem of making sure he actually went. At first, he started to attack again, and then, realizing he'd probably get overwhelmed, he finally skulked off. He gave us one last menacing look as he disappeared into the darkness. I didn't think being taken down by a group of teenagers had done a lot for his self-esteem. He gave me in particular a look of hatred, and I shuddered at the idea of him knowing my name. There was nothing to be done about it now. I could only hope my plan had a chance of working. Dennis and the others got over me letting the Strugoi go once we made a few other kills that week. We fell into a routine, investigating clubs and dangerous parts of town, relying on my senses to tell us when danger was near. It was funny to me how much the group soon began to rely on my leadership. They claimed they wanted no part of the Guardian's rules and authority, but they responded surprisingly well to me telling them what to do. Well, more or less. Every once in a while, I'd see a bit of that unhinged recklessness. One of them would try to play hero, underestimate a Strugoi, or go in without the rest of us. Arthur nearly ended up with a concussion that way. As the largest of all of us, he'd gotten a bit cocky and was therefore caught off guard when a Strugoi threw him into a wall. It had been a sobering moment for all of us. For a few agonizing moments, I'd feared Arthur was dead, and that it was my fault as their leader. One of Sydney's alchemists had come, though I'd made sure not to be around, lest Abe find me, and had treated Arthur. The guy said Arthur would be fine with some bed rest, meaning he had to stop hunting for a while. It was hard for him to do, and I had to yell at him when he tried to follow us one night, reminding him of all their friends who had died before because of such stupidity. Out in the human world, Dompierre's tended to run on human schedules. Now I put myself on a nocturnal schedule, just like I'd been on at the academy. The others followed suit, except for Tamara, since she had a day job. I didn't want to be asleep during the time Strugoi prowled the streets. I had called Sydney each time we left a kill, and word had to be getting around in the Strugoi community that someone was doing a lot of damage. And if the Strugoi we'd released had carried my message, some of those Strugoi could specifically come looking for me. As days passed, our kills dropped a little, making me think the Strugoi were indeed being cautious now. I couldn't decide if that was a good or bad thing, but I urged the others to be extra careful. They were beginning to revere me as a goddess, but I took no satisfaction in their adoration. My heart still ached from all that had happened with Lyssa and Dimitri. I wrapped myself up in my task, trying only to think of working the Strigoi community to get closer to Dimitri. But when we weren't out hunting Strigoi, I had a lot of downtime with nothing to do. And so I kept visiting Lyssa. I'd known there were a lot of kids, like Mia, who lived at the royal court because their parents had jobs there. I didn't quite realize how many there were, though. Avery naturally knew them all, and to no one's surprise, at least not mine, most of them were spoiled and rich. The rest of Lyssa's visit had been a series of other functions and formal parties. The more she listened to Royal Moroi talk business, the more it irritated her. She saw the same abuses of power she'd noted before, the same unfair way of distributing guardians like they were property. The controversial issue of whether Moroi should learn to fight alongside the guardians was also still a hot topic. Most of the people Lyssa ran into at court were of the old-school mentality. Let guardians fight and Moroi stay protected. After seeing the results of that policy, and the successes that had happened when people like Christian and I tried to change it, hearing the selfishness among the Moroi elite enraged Lyssa. She welcomed her escapes from these events whenever she could, anxious to run wild with Avery. Avery was always able to find people to hang out with and attend parties of a much different nature than Tatiana's. Stifling court politics never came up at these parties, but there were still plenty of other things to drag Lyssa's mood down. In particular, Lyssa felt her guilt, anger, and depression over me spiraling deeper and deeper. She'd seen enough of Spirit's effects on her moods to recognize potential warning signs, though she hadn't been actively using Spirit while on this trip. Regardless of the mood's cause, she still continued to do her best to seek distraction and drown her depression. "Watch it," warned Avery one evening. She and Lyssa were at a party the night before they had to fly back to the academy. A lot of those who lived at court had permanent housing, and this party was at the townhouse of some Zelsky who served as an aide on a committee Lyssa didn't know. Lyssa didn't really know their host either, but that didn't matter, save that his parents were out of town. "Watch what?" asked Lyssa, staring around the sights. The townhouse had a courtyard out back, lit up by tiki torches and strings of twinkling lights. There were drinks and food in full force, and some Moroi guy had a guitar out and was trying to impress girls with his musical skills, which were non-existent. In fact, his music was so awful that he might have discovered a new way to kill Strigoi. He was cute enough, though, that his admirers didn't seem to care what he played. "This," said Avery, pointing at Lyssa's martini. "Aren't you keeping track of how many of those you're taking down?"
"Not from what I can tell," said Adrian.
He was sprawled on a lounge chair nearby, a drink in his own hand. Lyssa felt a bit amateur compared to them. While Avery was still her wild and flirtatious self, she didn't have the crazed or stupid air of someone completely trashed. Lyssa didn't know how much the other girl had been drinking, but it was presumably a lot since Avery always had a drink in hand. Likewise, Adrian never seemed to be without a beverage, the effects of which mostly mellowed him out. Lyssa supposed they had a lot more experience than her. She'd gone soft over the years.
"I'm fine," lied Lyssa, who was watching her surroundings spin a little and seriously contemplating joining some girls dancing on a table across the courtyard.
Avery's lips quirked into a smile, though her eyes showed a bit of worry.
"Sure, just don't get sick or anything. That kind of thing gets around, and the last thing we need is everyone knowing that the Dragomir girl can't hold her liquor. Your family has a fierce reputation to maintain."
Lyssa downed the drink.
"Somehow I doubt alcohol consumption is part of my family's illustrious ancestry."
Avery pushed Adrian over and laid down next to him on the lounge chair.
"Hey, you'd be surprised. In 10 years, this group will be your peers on the council. And you'll be trying to pass some resolution and they'll be like, 'Remember that time she got trashed and threw up at that party?'"
Lyssa and Adrian both laughed at that. Lyssa didn't think she was going to get sick, but like everything else, she would worry about it later. The bright point of all this was that drinking was helping numb the memories of what had happened earlier in the day. Tatiana had introduced her to her future guardians, a seasoned guy named Grant and the young lady who was named Serena. They had been nice enough, but their parallels to Dimitri and me had been overwhelming. Taking them on had seemed like a betrayal to us, yet Lyssa had simply nodded and thanked Tatiana. Later, Lyssa had learned that Serena had originally been lined up to be the guardian for a girl she'd known her entire life. The girl wasn't royal, but sometimes, depending on guardian numbers, even non-royals got assigned guardians, though never more than one. When positions for Lyssa's protection opened up, however, Tatiana had pulled Serena from the job with her friend. Serena had smiled and told Lyssa it didn't matter. Duty came first, she said, and she was happy to serve her. Yet Lyssa felt bad, knowing it had to have been hard on both girls, and terribly unfair. But there it was again, an unfair balance of power with no one to really keep it in line. Leaving that encounter, Lyssa had cursed her own meekness. If she hadn't had the courage to follow me, she thought, she should have at least put her foot down and demanded that Tatiana give her my mother instead. Then Serena could have gone back to her friend, and there'd be one friendship still left intact in the world. The martinis simultaneously seemed to numb the pain and make her feel worse, which honestly made no sense to Lyssa. Whatever, she thought. And when she caught a glimpse of a server passing by, she waved him over to order more. Hey, can I... Ambrose? She stared in surprise at the guy standing before her. If there'd been a swimsuit calendar for hottest Dompier guys, this one would have been the cover model. Aside from Dimitri. But then, I was biased. This guy's name was Ambrose, and she and I had met him on our trip there together. He had deeply tanned skin and well-formed muscles underneath his gray button-down shirt. He was a particular oddity at court, a Dompier who'd rejected guardian service and performed all sorts of tasks here, like giving massages and, if rumor was true, having romantic encounters with the queen. That one still made me cringe, and I'd run into some pretty disgusting things in my life. "Princess Dragomir," he said, flashing her one of his perfect white grins. "An unexpected surprise." "How have you been?" she asked, genuinely happy to see him.
"Good, good. I have the best job in the world, after all. And you?"
"Great," she replied. Ambrose paused, eyeing her. He didn't drop that gorgeous grin, but Lyssa could tell he didn't agree with her. She could see the disapproval in his face. Avery accusing her of drinking too much was one thing, but some pretty Dompier servant? Unacceptable. Lyssa's demeanor grew cold, and she held out her glass. "I need another martini," she said, her voice as haughty as that of any perfect royal. He sensed the change in her, and his friendly smile turned to one of polite indifference.
"Right away."
He gave her a small bow and headed off to the bar.
"Geez," said Avery, watching admiringly as he walked away. "Why didn't you introduce us to your friend?"
"He's not my friend," snapped Lyssa. "He's nobody."
"Agreed," said Adrian, putting an arm around Avery. "Why look elsewhere when you've got the best right here?"
If I hadn't known any better, I'd have sworn there was a hint of legitimate jealousy underneath his jovial tone.
"Didn't I go out of my way to bring you to breakfast with my aunt?"
Avery gave him a lazy smile.
"That's a good start. You've still got a ways to go to impress me, Ivashkov."
Her gaze drifted over Lyssa's head and turned surprised.
"Hey, jailbait's here."
Mia, with Jill in tow, came striding through the garden, indifferent to the shocked looks she received. The two of them were clearly out of place. "Hey," said Mia when she reached Lyssa's group. "My dad just got called away, and I have to go with him. I've got to give Jill back."
"No problem," said Lyssa automatically, though she clearly wasn't happy about Jill being there.
Lyssa still kept wondering if Christian had some special interest in her.
"Everything okay?"
"Yeah, just business." Mia made her farewells to everyone and left the party as quickly as she'd come, rolling her eyes at the other royals' sneers in shock as she passed. Lyssa turned her attention to Jill, who had sat gingerly in a nearby chair and was staring around her in wonder.
"How's it been? Did you have fun with Mia?"
Jill turned back to Lyssa, face brightening.
"Oh yeah, she's really great. She's done so much work with water, it's crazy. And she taught me a few fighting moves, too. I can throw a right hook, although not very hard."
Ambrose returned with Lyssa's drink. He gave it to her wordlessly and softened a bit when he saw Jill.
"You want anything?"
She shook her head.
"No, thanks."
Adrian was watching Jill carefully.
You okay here? Do you want me to take you back to guest housing?
Like before, his intentions weren't romantic in the least. He seemed to regard her as a little sister, which I thought was cute. I hadn't thought him capable of that kind of protective behavior. She shook her head again.
It's okay. I don't want you to have to leave, unless...
Her expression grew worried. Do you want me to go?
Nah, said Adrian. It's nice to have someone responsible around in the midst of all this madness. You should get yourself some food if you're hungry.
You're so motherly, teased Avery, echoing my thoughts.
For whatever reason, Lissa took Adrian's responsible comment personally, like he was directly slamming her. I didn't think that was the case at all, but she wasn't really thinking all that clearly. Deciding she wanted some food herself, she got up and wandered over to the table in the courtyard's garden that had trays of appetizers on it. Well, it had earlier. Now the table was being used by the dancing girls Lissa had noticed before. Someone had cleared space by moving all the trays of food to the ground. Lissa leaned over and picked up a mini sandwich, watching the girls and wondering how they could find any sort of beat in that royal guy's horrible music. One of the girls spotted Lissa and grinned. She extended a hand.
Hey, come on up.
Lissa had met her once, but couldn't recall her name. Dancing suddenly seemed like a great idea. Lissa finished the sandwich and, drink in hand, allowed herself to be pulled up. This got a few cheers from people gathered around. Lissa discovered that the crappy music was irrelevant and found herself getting into it. Her and the other girls' moves varied from overtly sexual to mockeries of disco. It was all fun, and Lissa wondered if Avery would claim this would haunt her in 10 years, too. After a while, she and the others actually attempted some synchronized moves. They started by swaying their arms in the air and then moved on to some chorus line kicks. Those kicks proved disastrous. A misstep, Lissa was wearing heels, suddenly sent her over the table's edge. She lost the drink and nearly collapsed before a pair of arms caught her and kept her upright.
My hero, she muttered.
Then she got a good look at her savior's face.
Aaron?
Lissa's ex-boyfriend, and the first guy she'd ever slept with, looked down at her with a smile and released her once he seemed certain she could stand. Blonde-haired and blue-eyed, Aaron was handsome in a surfer kind of way. I couldn't help but wonder what would have happened if Mia had seen him. She, Aaron, and Lissa had once been involved in a triangle worthy of any soap opera.
What are you doing here? We thought you disappeared, Lissa said.
Aaron had left the academy a few months ago.
I'm going to school out in New Hampshire, he replied. We're here visiting family.
Well, it's great to see you, said Lissa.
Things hadn't ended well between them, but in her current state, she meant her words. She'd had enough booze to think it was great to see everyone at the party.
You too, he said. You look amazing.
His words struck her more than she would have expected, probably because everyone else here had implied that she looked trashed and irresponsible. And break up or no, she couldn't help but recall how attractive she'd once found him. Honestly, she still found him attractive. She just didn't love him anymore.
You should stay in touch, she said. Let us know what's going on.
For a moment, she wondered if she should have said that, in light of having a boyfriend. Then she dismissed her worries. There was nothing wrong with hanging out with other guys, particularly since Christian hadn't cared enough to come with her on this trip.
I'd like that, Aaron said.
There was something in his eyes she found pleasurably disconcerting.
I don't suppose, though, that I could get a goodbye kiss, seeing as I rescued you and all.
The idea was preposterous. Then, after a moment, Lissa laughed.
What did it matter?
Christian was the one she loved, and a kiss between friends would mean nothing. Looking up, she let Aaron lean down and cup her face. Their lips met, and there was no denying it. The kiss lasted a bit longer than a friendly one. When it ended, Lissa found herself smiling like a dazed schoolgirl, which, technically, she was.
See you around, she said, heading back toward her friends.
Avery wore a chastising look, but it wasn't over Aaron and the kiss.
Are you crazy? You nearly broke your leg. You can't do that kind of thing. You're supposed to be the fun one, pointed out Lissa. It wasn't a big deal.
Fun isn't the same as stupid, Avery retorted, face serious. You can't go do stupid shit like that. I think we should get you home.
I'm fine, said Lissa. She stubbornly looked away from Avery and instead focused on some guys who were doing shots of tequila. They were having some sort of competition, and half of them looked ready to pass out.
Define fine, said Adrian Riley, yet he looked concerned too.
I'm fine, Lissa repeated. Her gaze snapped back to Avery. I didn't get hurt at all.
She'd expected grief about Aaron and was surprised they hadn't given it to her, which made it even more surprising when it came from another source.
You kissed that guy,
exclaimed Jill, leaning forward. Her face was aghast, and she displayed none of her usual reticence.
It was nothing, said Lissa,
who was irked to have Jill reprimanding her of all people.
Certainly none of your business.
But you're with Christian. How could you do that to him?
Relax, jailbait, said Avery. A drunken kiss is nothing compared to a drunken fall. God knows I've kissed plenty of guys drunk.
And yet I remain unkissed tonight, mused Adrian, with a shake of his head.
It doesn't matter.
Jill was really worked up. She'd grown to like and respect Christian.
You cheated on him.
With those words, Jill might as well have practiced her right hook on Lissa.
I did not, Lissa exclaimed. Don't drag your crush on him into this and imagine things that aren't there.
I didn't imagine that kiss, said Jill, flushing. That kiss is the least of our worries, sighed Avery. I'm serious. Just let it go for now, you guys. We'll talk in the morning.
But, began Jill.
You heard her. Let it go,
a new voice growled. Reed Lazar had appeared out of nowhere and was looming over Jill, face as hard and scary as ever. Jill's eyes went wide.
I'm just telling the truth.
I had to admire her courage here, considering her normally timid nature.
You're pissing everyone off,
said Reed, leaning closer and clenching his fists.
And you're pissing me off.
I was pretty sure this was the most I'd ever heard him say. I tended to kind of think of him as a caveman, stringing three-word sentences together.
Whoa!
Adrian leapt up and rushed to Jill's side.
You need to let this go. What? Are you going to start a fight with some girl?
Reed turned his glare on Adrian.
Stay out of this.
The hell I will. You're crazy.
If anyone had asked me to make up a list of people most likely to risk a fight in defense of a lady's honor, Adrian Ivashkov would have been low on that list. Yet there he stood, face hard and hands sitting protectively on Jill's shoulder. I was in awe and impressed.
Reed,
cried Avery. She too had risen and now stood on Jill's other side.
She didn't mean anything. Back off.
The two siblings stood there, eyes locked in some kind of silent showdown. Avery wore the harshest look I'd ever seen on her, and at last he glowered and stepped back.
Fine, whatever.
The group stared in amazement as he walked abruptly away. The music was so loud that only a few of the partygoers had overheard the argument. They stopped and stared, and Avery looked embarrassed as she sank back in her chair. Adrian still stood by Jill.
What the hell was that?
Adrian demanded.
I don't know, Avery admitted. He gets weird and overprotective sometimes.
She gave Jill an apologetic smile.
I'm really sorry.
Adrian shook his head.
I think it's time for us to go.
Even in her drunken state, Lissa had to agree. The confrontation with Reed had shocked her into soberness, and she was suddenly uneasily evaluating her actions tonight. The glittering lights and fancy cocktails of the party had lost their charm. The drunken antics of the other royals seemed clumsy and stupid. She had a feeling she might regret this party tomorrow. Once back in my own head, I felt fear set in. Okay, something was very wrong with Lissa, and no one else seemed to notice it. Well, not to the extent they should have. Adrian and Avery did seem concerned, but I had the feeling they were blaming her behavior on the drinking. Lissa was still reminding me a lot of how she'd been when we'd first returned to St. Vladimir's when spirit had been seizing her and messing with her mind. Except, I knew enough about myself now to realize that my anger and fixation on punishing Strigoi was being influenced by spirit's dark side, too.
That meant I was draining it away from her. It should have been leaving Lyssa, not building up. So what was wrong with her? Where was this short-tempered, crazy?